Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. John Broadbent's reputation amongst those that take the time to get to know him is one of wise elder. Originally a mechanical engineer, over the last 30 years he has had various businesses, from engineering to software to retail and even a wellness centre. He has met shaman in Alaska, sages in the Himalayas, healers in Bali, Maasai in Kenya and elders at Uluru, all of which challenge his notions of reality. His exposure to other cultures, ceremony and ritual has greatly influenced and significantly widened his worldview, as well as his intuition. He has a burning passion to explore all life's experiences and is always willing to listen and guide, calling on his experience and practical wisdom. He continues to enjoy the journey of discovery, both of himself and the psychological underpinnings of business, with a specific focus on leadership and how we can all become more effective in leading those around us. Hi, John. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Thank you, Leanne. Good to be here and with you today.
Yeah, I'm really excited to share your story. So shall we get started?
Yes, please do.
Excellent. All right. Do you want to tell us a little bit where you are now? What's actually happening for you right now?
So in my life, I've been on, I guess, what I'd call a man's inner journey for 27 years. I'll share how all that started, I guess, a little bit further in the podcast. But I'm probably in the most settled place in my life. I think I've been for a very long time. I'm the father to two boys, one almost 16 and one almost 10. So they keep me pretty, as a single dad, they keep me pretty active and pretty involved in their lives. And I have to say that parenting is the best thing I ever did. Yeah. I'm in a new business. I used to be in manufacturing and engineering and software development for food manufacturers particularly. But at the end of last year, I realized that I wasn't aligned with my business partner after sort of 6 or 7 years we're going in different directions. So I resigned from my own business and decided to step out to really do much more in the coaching and mentoring space, which is the work that I really love to do, and really share my own experience of how to live a more fulfilling life.
So what is your story? So, you touched on it a little bit, but what's your story to get you to this point in time?
So as a mechanical engineer, a bit of a propeller head, a bit of a nerd, three pens in my pocket, working in a factory for many years. In my first long-term relationship, my partner wanted to go and swim with dolphins. And I guess to humour her, I went, yeah, whatever. We looked around at the spinner dolphins in Hawaii. I think there were some places on the Queensland coast, but for whatever reason, we chose Monkey Mia in West Australia. So at the end of January 1991, we flew to Perth, hired a car, drove up to Monkey Mia. It was about 1,000 Ks. I remember getting out of the car. It was like 40 degrees. We'd hired a cabin for a few days. It was 8 days. And I remember dropping the bags, putting on my boardies, walking down to the water's edge, and in came the dolphins. They sort of roll on their side. You're up knee deep in water. You're not allowed really to have any interaction with them, and they sort of look at you and then off they go. And I remember coming away from that thinking, well, I've done that now and I'm here for 8 days. I'm going to be bored shitless by the end of it. And by the end of the eighth day, I was ready to sell my house in Sydney, move up there and work on a pearl boat.
Wow.
It wasn't until years later that I think I realized that, because I then spent quite a bit of time in the water and they'd come along and they'd swim around you and they'd sonar you, and there's obviously communication going on around me. It wasn't until, I got back, and 2 days after I arrived back in Sydney, out of the blue, I got a phone call from a personal assistant to a guy I'd heard did extraordinary sort of experiential workshops. I knew of him, but we'd never met. And I had really no intention of ever going down that path. But I kid you not, I'd been home for 2 days. It was the days before mobile phones. This is 1991. And my phone rang and I picked up the phone, and it was his personal assistant saying, you've been invited to a dolphin meditation at Stuart's house. And I was like, who are you? How did you get my number? But the synchronicity of that was not lost on me. So me and my partner went over to, and I met Stuart for the first time, and I'd expected, based on what I'd heard, this bearded Gandalf character. And he was a year younger than me. He would have been 33, 34. Very handsome, long, straight black hair, like a Native American Indian, very chiseled, wearing a pair of tie-dyed overalls and no shirt and bare feet. And I went, wow, what an enigmatic character. Anyway, I did my first experiential workshop with him in the June of that year. I sat in my arrogance for most of the weekend thinking, what the hell am I doing here, wasting my money at a long weekend listening to people talk about their problems, because I didn't have any. At least I thought I didn't. And then after lunch on the Sunday, he spoke to me, and in about 3 minutes he had me in tears, and I hadn't expressed emotion in that way for a long time. And that's when I went up to him in the break and I said, how did you do that? And he looked at me and he said, I know you better than you know yourself. And that was the perfect gauntlet to throw down for me, because I was damned if anybody was ever going to know me better than myself. So I then hung out with him for nearly 9 years. I got to meet Shaman in Alaska. I got to meet elders at Uluru. I got to meet Maasai in Kenya, sages in the Himalayas, healers in Bali. So my little three-dimensional engineering brain was fried on many an occasion. I had some extraordinary experiences that were inexplicable in the, you know, true physical sense of the laws of physics. But as I started to dig deeper into who I thought I was, he was an expert at allowing people to explore the human shadow. I used to call him a shadow boxer. So where most of us are, I think, aware that we have, you know, that abyss that we tend to avoid at times in our lives, the deep, probably repressed parts of ourselves, he would go into that abyss and invite you down to go and explore. And it was challenging. I mean, there was stuff that we have to deal with sometimes as humans from our upbringing, and the values and beliefs that we carry can be quite difficult. And there's also often trauma there as well. So as that process unfolded for me, I became more mobile, I became more connected, I became more aware, and life suddenly took on almost like a whole new dimension for me, in that the things that I would normally miss, I started to pay attention to. And that then led me on, yeah, some extraordinary journeys, and realized, I've just listened to a book at the moment called The Universe Has Your Back. And listening to it is really good, because it's reminding me that if we say yes when life presents us with challenges, it's the fast track. If we say no, life just keeps showing up the same challenge until we say yes. So I've learned you just may as well say yes and get on with it.
Yeah, so, I love that. Yeah, I got a bit of a saying of say yes to new adventures.
Yeah.
Anything that makes me feel a bit fearful, think, yeah, that's a new adventure. We're going to say yes to that one. So,
because you can never learn less.
That's it.
You know.
Very true. So do you think you've had a number of tipping points for change along the way? Like, there was obviously that big one you were just talking about when you went on that retreat. But what about other tipping points for change?
Well, at the end of 1992, and the recession Australia had to have, I was in business, and interest rates, I think, hit 25%. On our overdraft. It was a manufacturing business, and the business went south. So I lost my house, my relationship, my life savings. And October long weekend, 92, I walked out of my house that I built and owned with a suitcase. And leading up to that was a really dark time. The fact that I'd bumped into Stuart the year before, again, you know, no coincidence, because that was a time that was very deep and dark for me. And I seriously contemplated suicide during that time. But having someone outside of me who could shine some light on that, it wasn't actually that bad. It felt that bad because I'd failed, and I'd come up from an upbringing where failure was never an option. My father, who recently passed away, used to joke with him, because he said to me on numerous occasions that the only mistake he ever made was thinking he once made a mistake. So I had to grow up being Mr. Perfect.
Yeah.
And unpacking all that as a result of a catastrophic failure, where society said you need to have a house, a relationship, and money in the bank and a car, and, you know, all that, all the trappings of a material life, they were taken away. And then I was left with, well, me. So I was like, okay, well, let's start investing in me. And so that's when I spent the next 8 years after that then traveling. and learning and exploring. And then when Stuart died in January 2000, very suddenly at the age of 41, I raided his library because I hadn't been much of a reader. And he had the most extraordinary eclectic library of stuff around human development and psychological development. And what I read finally gave me a framework so that I could understand what had happened to me, for me, and therefore I could share that experience with other people. And so that led me to commit to writing a book called Man Unplugged in 2013, and then it was published in 2014. And that's really an allegorical journey of my own unraveling, plus supported by other people's work to try and put that into some accessible framework that men can read and digest.
So what about like challenges? You've mentioned a couple of challenges there along the way that, you know, you went really, really dark. What about other challenges, say in business, like even in the last, well, since you've gone into business for yourself, have you had any challenges where you felt like throwing in the towel?
Yes. 2009, the GFC got caught again. So that was my second boom and bust cycle. But I had the skills then to, as difficult as it was, I had the skills to deal with it. And I guess the mojo, the thing that gets me up every day and gets me out into the world every day, is that I've become a lifeaholic. I've learned to feel comfort in discomfort. And in fact, that was a challenge at the end of my second long-term relationship of 21 years. Was that I wanted to continue to grow and explore. And my partner at the time didn't. Her, I think, life ambition was to be the mother of two kids. And once that sort of happened, it's almost like she stopped wanting to grow and learn. And so we grew apart. And for me, I think I get bored really easily now. You know, if life's not throwing regular challenges up. And my father passing away 2 months ago was probably one of the biggest challenges in recent times, because we were very close. He and I had you know, settled our differences over time. We built a very good relationship. He loved his – I'm his only son, and therefore my boys are his only grandkids, and they're into soccer and he was into soccer. So it was, you know, a really good relationship. And out of the blue, he decided he was feeling really well for the first time in months. He went and played golf with his friends and had a heart attack on the golf course, and that was it. So a difficult time to go through from a grieving process, but also a lot of relief in my part, in the sense that I'd made a commitment 5 years before, I think it was, when he had a really bad bout of pneumonia and it was touch and go, that I would not have any regrets. So I put in the time and effort and energy and focus and listening to Dad, who was a full-time carer for my mum with dementia, and he really showed me what it actually means to, you know, really take care of someone.
Yeah. Putting one foot in front of the other, do you have like a big vision that keeps you going, or is it things like that that have happened that have just made you appreciate life and you're just, you know, waking up as that lifeaholic?
It's really a combination of both. My boys keep me going big time, because the feedback that I get from, you know, teachers and peers and soccer coaches is that they're good kids. I give them probably a bit more of a free rein than their mum. Dads tend to do that. I know what I was up to in my teenage years, and so my responsibility, I feel, as a parent, and I think Osho, the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, said something along the lines of that a parent's responsibility is to teach our children how to find the truth and know what it is when they find it. And I think as a parent, it's also our responsibility to keep that light in their eyes burning bright, because I see children that are incredibly ebullient and vibrant and expansive, and then over time, society, schools, parenting, we shut down all this, you know, infinite possibility that we're all born with, and we compartmentalize ourselves. And Debbie Ford, an author who writes about the human shadow, made a comment along the lines of that when we're born, we're a thousand room mansion of infinite possibility, and then we become acceptance seeking machines. And by the time we become an adult, we're a two-room bedsit that needs a bit of work.
Oh, yeah, I love that story.
It's so true. So I've spent the last 27, 28 years opening some of those doors and finding some of those rooms.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that sometimes when we get older, that's when we start doing that because, you know, we're starting to realize that yes, our as children you have all this wonderful creativity and opportunities, and then suddenly, you know, it's like society saying no, you can't have all that. You've got to close down and conform and be a certain way and do certain things and
Yes.
like have your house and that sort of stuff that you were talking about earlier. Yeah.
And be unhappy.
Yeah. Well, that's it. There's so many unhappy people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm learning that happiness comes from being in the happening. It comes from being present with what is. And I liken the journey, if you like, and I've written about this in my book, that really doing your in a process is like climbing Mount Everest. So a lot of us are sitting at base camp.
Yes.
We know there's a mountain there. Some of us find the courage to start the ascent, and then you're dressed in shorts and thongs, and you realize that wasn't actually a good idea. And so you come back and you prepare, and then you finally do your first Everest. And when you get to the top, you rest for a while, and then you see another one. And now, when I get challenges presented to me, it's almost like, well, I've done it, three or four times before. I've faced major issues like that, or dug deep and found deep parts of myself and reclaimed those parts of myself. That now, when that happens, I look and go, ha, here's another mountain. I'm a bit tired, but I've done this before, so okay, let's go. And I've learned to be patient with myself.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't
I
it?
think that's the thing.
Yes. What about an ignition point? Have you had a time when things have really just started taking off for you?
Yes, and it scared the living daylights out of me. I went to actually an experience in August last year. I'd call it a very deep shamanic experience. And in this experience, I was taken to a very deep place within my psychology, and I could see the metaphor that was shown to me was that I had all these spinning plates, and I said I could feel how dysfunctional that was, just to scatter myself and do all these things. So I made a commitment to do four things and four things in order. And I was blown away when the fourth thing fell into place that I'd forgotten, like 6 months before I'd made this commitment, like a deep commitment. And it was to go to a conference in Vancouver and take my two boys with me and do a road trip, which we did. We did the west coast of the US in a Camaro convertible. It was then to close out my cousin's estate because I was executor and trustee of his estate, and it was a mess, and it had taken me 20 months, but I hadn't put the time and energy in. So I then followed that as the next step in the sequence. Then it was to move out of the home that had been our family home and find my own place with the boys. And literally the day the deed was signed for the close out of my cousin's estate, my eldest son's found a rental on realestate.com.au, 1300 meters from where we were living, and there were very rare finds. That was a Wednesday afternoon, and by Monday the place was ours. It was completely effortless just before Christmas. And the fourth thing I committed to do, that once we'd moved and settled, I'd then go out and look for a relationship. And the week after Christmas, I found the person that I'm now with. And when I then stopped and looked back at that, I went, wow, how can that be? So I think it was Goethe who said that at the point of commitment, the whole universe conspires with us. And I've realized that if we really commit to something, the universe has your back. We've just got to commit and get out of the way. And I've been awestruck at the number of couple of times, probably three times in my life that I've done that. I've made a deal with the universe, is what I'd say, and the universe has kept its side of the bargain. Like, and then some.
Yes.
So we do have power to create. The question is, how willing are we to commit to that creation?
Yeah,
And be
definitely.
careful what you ask for.
That is so true. Yes. Yeah. So by doing all this and things falling into place like your four things, what new possibilities have opened up for you?
Coaching and mentoring has been a thing that's opened up for me as a result, because I think when we live life and we perhaps broaden our worldview through particularly travel, inner and outer exploration, and we meet younger people, the elder role in our society is still not that valued. I'm fortunate to be part of a men's wellbeing community in Queensland, where men are invited into the elder group. Not because of age, but because of service, and willingness to share. And the elders in that community are held in very high regard by the younger men. And both the youngers and the elders are honoured. First, the youngers for doing the work they're doing and wanting to become, you know, better human beings, but the elders for having not only the wisdom to share, but also the capacity to listen, understand, and have empathy. Mm. And so for me, as I'm getting older, I'm finding that some people are coming into my orbit that are naturally, you know, gravitating to what it is that I know that can be of help to them. And it saddens me that, you know, our society is such that we put old people into nursing homes.
Yes.
And within those four walls of a nursing home, there is unbelievable amounts of collective wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And often a lot of it is lost. And it's one of the reasons why I think the Thousand Ripples Project, you know, with Stacey Hewish is such a great project, because it's allowing us as elders to share some of life's wisdom.
Yeah, it's a great project, isn't it? Because there's so many different perspectives that we can come from, you know, once we've got experience, and that we can give to them and hopefully help them have a little bit of easier journey.
Yeah, I mean, at my age, in the, you know, late teens, early 20s, no one was going to tell me what to do.
Yes.
And I don't expect this generation to be any different. We have to find our own way. However, if there's an awareness that certain choices can lead to better outcomes, and that we're responsible for every choice that we make, then I think we pass on probably one of the keys to life is that, you know, Stuart said to me many years ago before he passed away, in truth, there are no victims. And I sat with that for almost a year as a puzzle.
Yes.
I said, yeah, but what happens if you step off the curb and you get hit by a bus? You know, and he goes, well, who decided to step off the curb? I was like, oh, yeah, good point. And it takes us to a place of what I call, you know, profound personal responsibility.
Mm.
One thing I'd like to share, I guess, is a realization that happened quite a few years ago that purely from a place of pure logic really sat me on my butt. And I was one day considering some stuff and I went, okay, if the outer world is not showing up as a perfect reflection of my inner world, then something or someone else is influencing that. I want to know who it is. I don't think it's Charlton Heston or Morgan Freeman dressed in white sitting on a throne somewhere going, you're going to have a bad day today, or you're going to get hit by a car today, or you're going to have a stroke today or a heart attack or win the lottery. But no, that just doesn't sit well with me, because if that's true for 7.5 billion people on the planet, then yeah, it just didn't make logical sense. So out of that thought process, I came to the conclusion that the world must be showing up, the outer world must be showing up as a direct reflection of my inner state. Mm. I can't see it being any other way.
Yeah.
And so as young people growing up, if someone said to me, well, look what's showing up for you. You keep repeating this pattern of risk and being reckless in, you know, going into business and, you know, this repeat pattern, which I only discovered a couple of years ago was a very deep part of my psychology, that I was being reckless with various things in my life. And that was a real wake-up call. If somebody had told me when I was younger that, you know, don't be so reckless, James Rain, it would have made a big difference if it was someone that I looked up to that in a mentoring role, but I didn't have many mentors in those days.
All right, let's have a change in pace and do the speed round.
Sure.
What's your favourite book?
Probably Balancing Heaven and Earth by a guy called Robert Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He was a student of Carl Jung, met Jung, but Robert Johnson's written probably 15 to 20 books. He, she, we.
Yes.
Transformation, Owning Your Own Shadow, Inner Work, like a whole range. And I love his work. It's just so accessible. But only recently he published, he's still alive, I think he's 97, still living in San Diego. He was, up until a few years ago, he was in private practice. He for me has been one of the most extraordinary authors, because I've learned so much from his work. But he wrote a book called Balance, or co-authored a book called Balancing Heaven and Earth, which is actually his story. And now that I've read it, I want to go back and read all these books, because it will put them into a different context.
Yes.
So that's probably my favourite.
Mm, wow. What about a mentor figure that's helped you the most?
So obviously Stuart during the 90s, but before that I had an older, working as an engineer, I had an electrician that, in quotes, worked for me. but he was old enough to be my dad. And he knocked off a few chips off my shoulders and rounded a few edgy corners over the time that we worked together. He was an amazing human being. And then more recently, I belonged to a business community run by a guy called Kerwin Ray. And Kerwin, as a mentor in business development and self-awareness guru, is the real deal. He's an extraordinary, authentic human being who wants businesses to change the world by people running functional, effective and world-class cultures. And he's doing that. He's leading the way.
He certainly is. What daily ritual works best for you?
Walking my dog. Sometimes it's early morning, depending on the climate. Other times it's a 10:30 down tools after a couple of hours of work and a 10-minute walk up to the local shop and buy a good coffee.
Yes, yeah. One of my favourite things to do as well. What about favourite food?
Would have to be my homemade nachos.
Oh, that sounds good.
Made with organic ingredients.
What about country or city? Do you prefer living in one or the other?
I love Sydney. I came out here from the UK in 1968. My parents were 10-pound Poms. I got here for nothing. I remember coming through the heads on my birthday on a boat, seeing the Opera House, obviously under construction in those days. And it was just the most magical place. So I've lived overseas in Southeast Asia building factories in the 90s. But Sydney for me is still home despite the traffic.
What's your biggest piece of advice to give to others to help them make change?
Learn to trust yourself. I've learned through life that we can't give what we don't have. If we don't respect ourselves, we don't love ourselves, we don't value ourselves, we don't have self-worth, and we don't trust ourselves, then we create lenses from that lack that we then view life through. So someone might actually be doing something for you that's an act of care, but because we're viewing it through a lens of lack, we might view it with suspicion when there's actually no suspicion intent at all. And so my advice is fill your own cup first, find your value, find your worth, find that you can trust yourself, and only then can you really, you know, trust and value and love and respect those around you.
Great advice. All right, last question. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently or tell your former self?
I wouldn't do anything differently, because for me, I've learned that regret is an absolutely useless place to be. What would I tell myself? Keep your head down, keep your nose clean, follow your heart, and it will all work out in the end.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for your valuable time today, John, and sharing your story. We really appreciate it. Would you like to give us the best place to contact you, and we'll end it there?
Yeah, the website for the book is www.manunplugged.com.au, and there's details there on how you can contact me. And the Realized Potential website will probably be launched between this recording and when the podcast is eventually put up, but it's realizedpotential.com.au, and again, that has details about me and how to contact me.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leanne.
Igniters, John is a lifeaholic. He's learned to feel comfort in the discomfort, happiness in the happening. It's so key to commit to the universe and know that it has our back, and we just have to get out of the way. If you want to contact John, go to his book site, www.manunplugged.com.au, or his other website is www.realizedpotential.com.au. To work with me on getting that true inner balance so you can handle what the world throws at you, go to my website, www.leannblaney.com.